I think it's important to be able to run your fingers along the spines of the library and find some books that make you go, whoa, what's that doing there? And makes people laugh. Say, a book we like at the moment is called Caesar's Last Breath. We love seaside resorts. Things like Blowfish's Oceanopedia, which is 291 extraordinary things you didn't know about the sea. We've got a very good book, it's actually called Sex in the Sea, and it just makes being beside the sea more interesting.
Hello, I'm Carol Annett from Country and Townhouse magazine. Welcome to the House Guest Podcast, where I chat with experts from the world of interior design and decoration, the people behind the houses, hotels, shops and brands you see in glossy magazines like ours. If you listen on the Entail app, there's more information and images on the projects and people mentioned. And if you're doing up your own home, hopefully you'll pick up some tips for yourself. Today I'm chatting to Philip Blackwell of Ultimate Library, which creates bespoke book collections for hotels, resorts, retail, commercial spaces and private houses. Philip, you are very welcome. It's great to see you today. So you say, I believe that books should not only complement interior decor and look good, but also inform, educate and inspire. We call it intelligent luxury. This is such a fantastic idea. I love the idea of creating book collections for people. Tell me how the idea for Ultimate Library came about and how did you start?
Well, I've always loved finding the right books to read when I travel, and by which I mean fact or fiction that gives me a greater sense of place. And this is a habit that I picked up when I was in publishing, traveling around the world. I'd meet up with colleagues in far-flung places, and inevitably the conversation would turn to, what are you reading? And so we'd swap ideas, and in the back of my mind, there's a little database of what to read where compiled itself. And in today's world, everybody who has an idea or builds a database tries to think about monetizing it. Horrible word, but modern jargon. And scroll forward a few years, I was on a gap year after selling a business. Was traveling, staying in better places. And many of these places had a room they called a library, but actually anybody with any sense of bibliophilia would go in there and be generally disappointed, as you would find a bunch of orphans left behind by previous guests. And in my way, I thought we could do this better and started a conversation with owners of these properties. And one thing led to another. And a few years later, we're the only people who are mad enough to try and do this for a living.
Well, thank goodness for madness. That's all I can say. So you had a bookshop in Oxford, is that right? Blackwell's in Oxford?
That's a family business.
A family business. Books has always been a part of your life. Am I right in thinking that it was the chap behind Suneva Fushi in the Maldives, the Sixth Senses guy? Was he the first person that you worked with?
Yes, I mean, Sonny Shivdasani is one of the great innovators in hospitality. And from my perspective, it helps that he was educated at Oxford too. So there was a little bit of brand recognition. Indeed, he was a customer of me before I was a customer of him. And as is the way of things, we got chatting. And suddenly I get these wonderful little two-line emails. Philip, I'm opening a new resort. Can we have another book collection? And which, if you like books, is a sort of dream request. Create me a beautiful library of books for a resort in Koh Samui or the Maldives or wherever they were opening next.
What is your strategy behind putting a book selection together for somewhere like a new resort in the Maldives?
Well, we now take a more scientific approach, but at the end of the day, we need to create a book collection that gives guests a greater sense of place, anticipates the sort of things that people are going to read on holiday. And the way we think about it is that people read for pleasure, mostly when they travel or when they're on holiday. And like many things, they leave it till the last moment at the airport. And that airport thriller, which is a fantastic way to escape and relax, we think of as the canapé. And when you get to your resort and you're there and you've worked your way through your Lee Child or
Geoffrey Archer.
Everybody says Geoffrey Archer. So true. You're probably ready for something a bit meatier because your telephone is switched off, hopefully. You've gone through digital detox and you're thinking, your mind has got a vacuum that can be filled with fresh ideas and experiences. So what we try to do is create a book collection that gives you a greater sense of place if you want to read into the place you're in. We always have a little section of books that we call internally books I've lied about reading. But you probably think of, and I think of, as books I've always meant to read.
Right.
And then we reflect where people come, why they're coming. So they might be there for walking, hiking, diving, wellness and health. And the library is there as a complementary collection of books that supports everything you're thinking about and thinking of doing.
I know you work with Kit Kemp on the Ferndale Hotels as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she has beautiful libraries in her rooms. And it's interesting that you say that you think having a proper library has a disproportionate impact on people's perception of their brand and its intelligence. That's a really fascinating way of thinking about it and actually tell you what the importance of actually what you do. I mean, I think you have a story about a chap who couldn't be allowed into his room somewhere. What was that story?
We've done a lot of qualitative and quantitative research into why book collection matters and what sort of difference it makes. And our theory, and I would say this, is that pound for pound, it's the best investment you can make as an amenity in a hotel. It's a lot cheaper than a gym or a spa. And for those people that love reading, they rate it more highly than both those activities. And coming around to a point you made about the anecdote of the early arriving guest, the general manager at Hamyard told me that somebody come off the red eye at 7-8 o'clock in the morning. They come into the hotel hoping to get their room. Now, if anybody's ever stayed at Ferndale knows they have a near 100% occupancy. And so he was disappointed and tired and hungry. And so they solved the problem. So would you just go into the library, have a seat, as soon as we can find somewhere for you. But yeah, there's coffee, there's books, and you can relax. This guy emerged 3 hours later with a big smile on his face going, wow, I just love that room. It was just, it was comfortable, great things to read. Transformation of the guest experience.
So who do you tend to work with? Is it mostly interior designers or is it owners? Who do you tend to be working with?
There is no single answer to that question. The initial touch point might come from the owner or the owner's representative. It might come from the architect. It may come from the interior designer. It may well come from the management company. And it may come from the centre of the hotel group where we have arrangements to be their preferred supplier. In practice, the earlier we get in, the richer the mix. And we work on projects 2 years out. That's probably working with the architect and interior designer. Other ones we're incredibly reactive to, and I think we've done a whole book collection in 10 days for somebody.
Wow. What was the biggest one that you put together?
Oh, wow. That was the Duxton and Maxwell in Singapore, where they have a whole restaurant library, and we put 8,000 books in there.
Wow.
from Oxford to Singapore in a container. It took the team 3 days to put the whole thing together.
So you actually put the books out as well? Because presumably they need to know how they're going to be placed on the shelves and what's, you know, whether it's going to go under author or, I mean, are there rules about how you would put it together?
We will grid everything for the shelves and we will box the books by shelf and location. And that works in many cases. You know, we'll provide, for people who don't want us to come and do the setup, we'll provide online Zoom call to talk people through what can become a daunting pile of, you know, 40, 50 boxes of books. Other times we'll actually go out there and do the setup. And there are benefits to that approach because we build around it a whole guest engagement program to teach the staff about their book collection, how to communicate it, how to get the best out of their investment.
because I know you sell books almost by the meter. I mean, literally, you could buy, you know, a meter or 2 meters of books for your Chelsea pied-à-terre or your Oxford Manor House or whatever. How do you find that people have heard about you? Does it tend to be through word of mouth or through the website? I mean, I know, funnily enough, our offices are next door to each other, which was sort of slightly how we came across each other.
It's one of the first questions we ask any new client is, how do you discover us? And people come across us through Instagram, social media, press. Yeah, we've had people saying podcasts. We've had people who come to us and say, well, yeah, I saw an article about you in a newspaper. Then I saw another one. Then I thought, yes, I think we will contact these people. We've had some people who we've been working with for a number of years. And but coming back to your first point about selling books by the meter, I would correct you on that one, because one of the first inputs, of course, what is the linear length of shelving you want to fill and how full do you want them to be? So inevitably, it comes down to it's going to be 23 meters of books. And that's the space they want to fill. But we select by the individual book. So we might price and supply by the meter, but we select by the title. And that's incredibly important, that they end up with something that is being handcrafted, if that's not an overused word in today's world.
And what about colour coordination? Because I know some of these interior designers can be very fussy about the colours. Have you ever been asked to do a colour-coded library?
Rather more often than we perhaps necessarily want to. By that I mean, we did a New York apartment where they needed 12 metres of books, art, architecture, design, photography, but only in greys and blacks and muted tones. We're doing another project in Knightsbridge later this year. And again, colour palette first, content second. And that's what I mean by books that not only look good, but make you look good by being handcrafted.
Philip, you talk about respect for the printed word. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the respect for the printed word is both a blessing and a curse, in that one of our major competitors is dealing with people who think they have a library, but actually it's composed of books that people have left behind. And if you think about it, old paperback books are the only thing that is left behind by guests and recycled. Very often there's a reason they leave them behind. It's a blessing because in our experience, in 99% of cases, people want a collection of physical books, not only because they make a property look homely, and they say that a hotel should be a home from home, but better. So it's a great luxury to have a collection of beautiful books. And secondly, because when we travel, one of the great pleasures is turning the damn phone off and the iPad off and curling up with a physical book. You know, the words come off the page better. It's a more authentic experience. And you know, the touch, the smell. We tend to talk about printed books versus digital in the same way as a candle versus an electric light. An electric light is very industrial and functional, whereas a candle is a multi-sensory experience. It flickers, there's drama to that, it smells, it provides a much, much, much more natural light. And we are indeed the candles of the hotel world.
Have you ever had any books rejected? Are there any complete no-nos when it comes to... Because I know you like to be a little bit different with things, and you tend to put a few quirky titles in there as well. So tell us a bit about the selection and what's...
Sex, politics and religion are generally no-nos, and in some parts of the world, there are real sensitivities about political opinions, or in China, it's you know, where the lines are drawn on the map as to the Taiwan question. So we've learned to be very sensitive about that. Other people are entirely fixated by politics. We're doing a very, very politically focused library for somebody at the moment. But in answer to your comment about sort of quirky titles, I think it's important to be able to run your fingers along the spines of the library and find some books that make you go, whoa, what's that doing there? and makes people laugh. So, you know, a book we like at the moment is called Caesar's Last Breath. It's a history book, really, seen through decoding the air around us. And the hypothesis is that every breath you and I breathe in has a molecule that was breathed out by Caesar in his last breath. We love seaside resorts, things like Blowfish's Oceanopedia, which is 291 extraordinary things you didn't know about the sea. And this is a great eccentric who's compiled all these facts and figures. And it just makes being beside the sea more interesting. We've got a very good book, it's actually called Sex in the Sea, which is about hermaphrodite lobsters and things like that. But it's an unusual angle for reading about the world around you. We have another great book called How to Talk About Places You've Never Been, which is the importance of armchair travel, written by a French thinker. Just really good if you want slightly pretentious reading. We have a policy that says, trust us to get the selection right. And if there's anything you don't like, we'll replace it. I think the only book that was rejected last year was by a library in Malaysia who strongly objected to a novel, of all things, by Bill Clinton. He co-wrote a thriller a couple of years ago. So we duly replaced it. Why it offended Malaysian sensitivities, I don't know.
And what are you reading at the moment?
I'm wildly excited to be disappearing to Sicily next week. And as you can imagine, I've been doing my research and I've got a pile of about a dozen books, which I'm trying to whittle down. So I'm packing The Leopard by de Lampedusa, which I read there last time, but is just possibly the greatest novel of the 20th century. In complete contrast, a great writer called Matthew Fort, who is a foodie, has travelled around Italy three times now on his Vespa, getting under the skin of the local people, coming up with interesting recipes and tastes wherever he was. So that's going to be great fun. And there is so much classic writing on Sicily. It's probably the most invaded place in Europe. And therefore you've got Arabic culture come from one way, Carthaginians, Greeks, Romans, Normans, British, and just delving into that rich history through, of course, the mafia. many, many great writers like Norman Lewis and Goethe and people say. There's a very, very good book actually called Sicily Through Writer's Eyes, which is like a little amuse-bouche of little dishes of great writers.
How wonderful. I don't think you're going to have time for very much else other than sort of sitting on your deck chair with your toes in the sand, drinking in all these gorgeous words. Thank you, Philip. Oh, it's absolutely fascinating. I love the idea of it, and it's going to, I always wander into a library, but I'm going to take much more notice now and make sure that I give myself time when I go to a resort. And if they don't have a decent library, I am going to be giving your details to the general manager.
We'll be there.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to House Guest from Country and Townhouse Magazine with me, Carol Annett. Don't forget to subscribe to the series on iTunes or Endtail, where you can also find images, links and notes to enhance each episode. In the meantime, you can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett and keep up to date on all the podcast news and show notes online at countryandtownhouse.co.uk/podcast. And please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. For more news and views in the world of interior design, sign up to our newsletter at countryandtownhouse.co.uk, and why not listen in to our sister podcast, Breakout Culture, with Lord Ed Vasey and Charlotte Fruity Metcalf.